Good evening. Prime Minister Lawrence Wong described Budget 2025 as a budget for all Singaporeans. It has something for everyone, from young parents to seniors, low-income workers to people with disabilities, and from hawkers to tech companies.
But how exactly do these year's measures impact you? With us to answer your questions about the budget announcements is Second Minister for Finance Indrani Raja. Minister, welcome.
Welcome, Minister. Thank you for having me.
This is the fifth and final budget of the current government's term, and some have termed it an election budget. How would you describe the significance of this year's budget?
Well, Budget 2025 is actually intended to do three things. One, to tackle immediate concerns like cost pressures. Second, to position Singaporeans and Singapore for the future. Mm-hmm. And third, there's a celebratory element with SG60.
PM Wong also described Budget 2025 as shaped together with all Singaporeans. Now, indeed, Minister, before the budget, you met with a family of five, parents Josh and Stephanie, who've got 13-month-old twin girls and a 3-year-old boy. And here is an excerpt of that conversation.
Hi, good morning, Minister.
Hi.
Welcome to our home.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. Josh, right?
Yes.
So are these your kids?
Yes.
This is Ava.
And this is Avery.
How old are they?
They are one, just turned one.
Just turned one. Do they have like a favourite game?
I think the eggs one.
Oh, these eggs are really realistic. Look at that.
Yeah.
See? Though you have a banana in your egg, I'm not sure why though.
So they have an elder brother who is three. He's called Oliver.
Okay.
He's in school right now.
Yes.
I see. Yes. So he should be in nursery now?
Yes.
Yes, and okay. One.
This year's focus on budget is going to be on large families. In terms of bringing up three kids, I'm sure that, you know, there'll be additional costs. So do you have any, like, concerns about that?
For us as a working folk, when we talk about two, three or even more children, I think that childcare leave would be insufficient in certain ways. For example, last year when Oliver, our eldest, came back with hand-foot-mouth disease, the two girls got it as well.
Yeah. How did you cope during that period?
We had to rely on parents a lot. Both our parents ended up taking no-pay leave as well.
So I think if we could even share some of our like parental leave with them, that would be great as well.
Okay, so what are some of the costs that you incur when you're raising children?
Let's say milk, powder and diapers. These are the two main essentials and they cost the most as well. For every kid, we are estimating about, let's say, 2,000 a year for just diapers alone. And it's almost the same for milk powder as well. So we have three kids, easy math for us is 6,000 per year.
All of us in nursery, we love the curriculum in private childcare, but to think about 1,000 odd to almost 2,000, and then we have three kids, I think not sustainable. So we decided to put Oliver into a partner operated.
What kind of enrichment do they have?
Now, very creative. We have like young gymnasts and abacus and those coding. I would love to send my kids to coding.
Yeah.
So, but with all this added, you know, each is about 200 a month.
Do you have community programs here which actually give you the same kind of activities, but obviously at lower cost?
Sometimes the timings don't match. So after school, it's like immediate. So it's great, you know.
So for you, what works best is if all the enrichment takes place in
the school.
Within the school. So we actually did consider whether we could still enroll Oliver in the gymnast. But for that 200, we're thinking, what is the opportunity cost? What can we offset? Is it the milk? Mm-hmm. Is it diapers? Is it food, groceries at home? So that's usually one of our concerns about enrichment.
Okay. Well, let's see what we can do.
Stephanie and Josh, they are joining us. A warm welcome. Well, you have certainly a lot on your plate. Both of you are holding down full-time jobs. You've got three kids. And we heard there, you know, you both touched on various challenges from costs to childcare leave. And since then, Budget 2025 has been announced. Let's just first break down what exactly you will be getting. So in short, with the CDC vouchers, SG60 package and large family scheme, among other measures, you'll get up to $6,800 in FY 2025 alone. With all this help, you know, with the daily expenses of raising three young children, in particular, the $1,000 in Life SG credits your third child will get every year until age six. What are your thoughts on that? How do you think that's going to help you?
Those are very helpful, especially because that we are able to actually use it to defray a lot of costs from our healthcare costs to actually the daily necessities that we need to use, certainly they are very useful to help our family in the long run.
But do you feel this support is adequate, especially for this stage of life when your kids are still very young?
It is definitely helpful. It is also sufficient because we are talking about the life SG credits, for example. They are very helpful for us to defray day-to-day costs that we brought up in the previously. It was for the milk, powder and the diapers. And of course, other things that come with it as well, food.
And that works now with three kids. What if there was kid number four? What do you think?
When it comes to the fourth, I think we also want to focus on whether do we have enough time, is there enough energy, and also the amount. I think our costs and expenses would be more exponential instead of linear. So could there be more? That would be our question.
Yeah, so Minister, you know, if you have a fourth or a fifth child, for instance, we're talking about these hidden and higher costs, right? Maybe you need a bigger car or maybe you need a bigger space to live in. So there are all these extra costs involved. So do you see that the sort of concerns of having a larger families, you know, for people like Josh and Steph, perhaps considering to have more children?
Well, the idea behind the large family scheme is really to help defray some of the costs, because we know that that's what's on parents' mind. So if they had a fourth child, it will immediately trigger the First Step grant of 10,000, which can be used not just for the fourth child, but for all the children, right? And also the additional 5,000 for the mum's MediSave. And then each child would get the $1,000 Life SG credits. So it will definitely help. There's some things, for example, if you're buying for the family, you don't buy like one big bag of rice for each person, right? You buy a big bag of rice and that's shared round. So some things can be shared, some need to be individual. So not possible to sort of fine-tune it in such a granular fashion. The most important thing is let's try and give a boost to help them with the finances and the cost pressures. And hopefully, for those who are thinking of having an additional child, this will give them added assurance and it will help them to make the decision to go ahead and have the fourth or the third or the fourth.
Josh and Steph, actually, I want to ask you, because you have one child in preschool and there are two more who will be starting preschools quite soon. So the reduction in full-day childcare fee caps means you pay about $30 less a month per child. Does this help offset the extra cost of enrichment classes that you spoke about and that you would like the kids to attend?
Okay, so I think definitely the reduction in this amount and the lower in cap really does help us as we, you know, have two more going to preschool by the end of this year. So yeah, of course, on top of that, this enrichment courses that we brought up, it gives a holistic learning, it gives more exposure. Yeah, so we understand that CDE is used for preschool fees. Yeah, and we're just wondering, it's actually extendable to enrichment. Because the enrichments that are in school, they are not really covered by the CDA.
So can they use the grant for enrichment classes as well?
It depends on what kind, because if it's outside the anchor operated system or the school system, then, you know, there's a whole range, right? Some may cost a little bit, and then some who position themselves right at the top of the line, it can be very, very expensive. So I think what we want to do is make sure that all the sort of the normal costs are covered. Any extras, what this does is it frees up some cash for the extras, and then the parents can decide what else they want over and above, you know, the standard offerings.
Okay. Well, I want to move on a little bit because we did ask our viewers to send in questions they had about the budget. So let's get to some of them now. I want to bring up this one from Kenneth. We'll put it on screen. He's 36. He says, thank you very much for the emphasis on family, but are there any plans to extend more substantial assistance to middle-income families who are under financial pressure, especially those with multiple children?
OK, so if you look at this year's budget, you'll see that there's quite a lot there to help middle-income families as well. The CDC vouchers, of course, is per household. Then you have the SG60 vouchers. I'll come back to that in a moment. But the biggest thing that I think would help for middle-income families is the personal income tax rebate, because that, again, puts more cash into your hands. And if you think about it, every age is covered. We have the Life SG credits for the children of the younger age. Then the ones who are in secondary school and post-secondary, they also have $500 each. That's in the EduSave account, as well as the post-secondary account. And then the SG60 vouchers are for those 21 and above. They get 600 and seniors get 800. So if you're a larger family, middle income, it's about adding all of this up. Then don't forget there will be the USave as well. And then there is the GST top-ups, which we give, or the GST offsets. So have a look at it and sort of add it all together. You can use the Support for You calculator to work out how much you can get.
We have two questions from Alf and Joe, both asking essentially the same thing. So, Minister, beyond just giving out, you know, vouchers and subsidies, what is the government doing at a more fundamental level to address the rising cost of living?
Right. That's a really good question. And, you know, the inflation really began post-COVID with logistics crunches and then, of course, the Russia-Ukraine war. And you can see that in the past few years, we've done quite a bit to tighten up monetary policy, really to address the cost at which the goods are coming in. And the rate of inflation has come down. This is not to say that, you know, it's gone completely, but it is come down. It's more manageable than it was before. So that's one part of the strategy. But the other and more important part of the strategy is to make sure that Singaporeans have good jobs and good incomes, because if your income growth outpaces the inflation and the cost growth, then obviously you'll be able to manage better, which is why a very large portion of the budget is directed at the economy, as well as equipping and upskilling Singaporeans.
I think a number of Singaporeans feel that their wages is just not matching up with the cost of living, inflation and all of that.
Right. Well, I mean, if you look at the latest figures that are out, I mean, wages have grown. There has been income growth. What we really have to do is to try and make sure that Singaporeans have good jobs and good value-add jobs. So at one end of the scale, right, we've got the progressive wage model. I mean, you can't just say to an employer, please raise your wages just like that. You've got to make sure that there's some additional value add. So that's what the progressive wage model is intended to do for those at the lower income scale. Then in the middle portion, right, you want to grow opportunities. You also want to be able to upskill so that when they upskill, they have value add. Not sure if anyone noticed, but last year we had the working committee on accountants. Mm-hmm. And we looked at the accountants' starting salaries, you know, the graduates when they came out. And we felt that it was important to increase their starting salaries. But again, you couldn't go to the accounting firms and just say, increase. Because they'll say, why? And then they'll have to pass this on to their clients who will also say, why? So we worked with the IHLs such that when they were in the IHLs, they did internships. We worked on what kind of internships, what goes into the curriculum, and they can have credits for certain subjects that they've done, so that by the time they come out ready to start, they've got more knowledge, more skills under their belt, which justifies the increase in the salary.
Can we have more childcare leave rather than monetary help, Minister?
Yeah, so time is what people want.
Yes. I mean, time is a currency as well, and we're tackling that in different stages.
You talked about the SG60 package. A lot of people have been asking, but two of the most common questions that we've got is, why SG60 vouchers? Why not give us the cash? Right? I mean, Greg also makes the point that his 83-year-old father doesn't have a hand phone. So using the vouchers is a bit cumbersome. You know, why not just credit the money into their account?
From the feedback that we've had, the vouchers people can see, touch, feel. They know when they're using the vouchers. Sometimes when you just credit the cash directly, some may not even know that it has gone in. So you want to be sure that people actually receive it, know they have it. And then you also want to work with especially local businesses and partners, channel some of the business to them. So, you know, it's for those who come on board for the SG60 vouchers and accept them, it's business for them as well.
Okay. And now the big one, the SG60 baby gift. So can you give us any details about it?
Okay, I will be giving details in the Committee of Supply. But what I can say at this stage is simply this. When we were looking at what goes into the baby gift and we talked to parents, the constant feedback that came back to us was, please make sure that it is practical. Please make sure that we can use it. We don't want this sort of nice-looking stuff that we can't do anything with. And then it must look pretty. So we said, okay, well, aesthetically must be pleasing, but must be useful, must be something the parents like and something that the kids like. So we've worked towards that. And we have included certain items where they can look at it and remember in years to come that this was the year in which they were born or their children were born.
Very mysterious. We'll look forward to the big reveal. So what we do know from the budget is that under the large family scheme, any third or subsequent child born from February 18th will get $5,000 more in their child development account first step grant. Now, I'm going to bring you in again, Steph and Josh, about this. So this and the extra Life SG credits, right, is that going to, you know, sort of push you in a direction to have child number four, or the fact that there's twinning in your families, maybe you'll get four and five at the same time?
Try for that.
This is a very good question. The cost, the boost that is coming from the government certainly is helpful. However, to us as well, the consideration from having more than three children going to fourth or fifth child, right, is actually going beyond that. For example, childcare leave currently is standing about 6 days a year per working parent. However, when there is an example of, let's say, getting pregnant or having influenza, for example, that runs through the whole family, it only takes us off 2 weeks from work.
Yeah, they're actually not the only ones, you know, with issues or questions about childcare leave. You know, we can all feel for them. As a matter of fact, childcare leave was one of the most asked questions from our viewers. And we've got a parent of a three-month-old saying that there seem to be many benefits for babies born in 2025. For other young parents, would the government consider more childcare leave days? And another one from KL Chan 12 asking, can we have more childcare leave rather than monetary help, Minister?
Yeah, so time is what people want.
Yes. I mean, time is a currency as well. And we're tackling that in different stages. So because it wasn't specifically mentioned in budget, I think people may have forgotten what happened at NDR last year, where PM announced that we're going to be having 10 weeks of government-paid shared parental leave for newborns. So, you know, Josh, Steph, if you're having your fourth kid, don't forget you will get 10 weeks of shared parental leave. Well, 6 weeks if born in this year, 10 weeks if born next year. So you could time it just right because you still got the twins to look after, right? That's going to be really, really helpful to parents with newborns. And that was based on the feedback that we got talking to young couples because they felt at the early stage, the first 18 months is when they really need time with the kids. So the shared parental leave was intended to deal with that. Then we had the additional 2 weeks of paternity leave, government-paid paternity leave, which was made mandatory. That comes into effect this year as well. So all in all, when you add everything up with the government-paid maternity leave, etc., it's about 30 weeks, right?
Yeah.
This is for newborns. So I think the ones who are having questions right now are those who have children who are beyond the initial newborn stage, and especially when they're a year old, 2 years, etc. So we can look at that. Wouldn't rule it out, but right now, the employers are kind of like gasping for breath because of the pace of the change. We've come up with the first. It was voluntary 2 weeks paternity leave. Then we said this voluntary paternity leave is going to become mandatory. And then we went out with the shared parental leave. So they're like, hang on.
Who's going to do my work?
They're like, just give us time to adjust. So in fact, we wanted to do 10 weeks of shared parental leave straight off the bat. And they said, please, can we have it in two tranches?
Right.
So we did that. So we can look at childcare leave going ahead, but we also have to balance that with the employer's needs.
Yeah,
is why flexible work arrangements is another tool in the box to work with.
We have also like other viewers like Madam Tan, who's going to compound the question for employers by asking, why can't we extend the extra paid shared leave to those whose child is born in 2025 rather than starting only in April?
Well, again, because of the time or the lead time needed for the employers on the one hand, and also because you need some time for the government IT systems to be able to configure this. The reason is that the way the shared parental leave is designed is that, so this year is 6 weeks, right? Mm-hmm. By default, it's 3 weeks to mum, 3 weeks to dad.
Right.
But the parents can choose to make it, you know, 2 weeks for mum and 4 weeks for dad in any configuration. They also don't have to take it in a block. Mm-hmm. They can spread it out, which means that they have to work this out with the employer because you need to have mutual agreement and consensus. I mean, if there's no consensus, then it automatically goes in a block. But think of the IT system that has to take into account all these configurations to do the payment and the reimbursement. It takes a little bit of time, and that was, you know, it needed a few months. So we have to make sure that everything's in place.
So just to make sure that things work well when they kick off, you know. So it's, okay, we've talked about the younger families and children. Let's move on to the other side. I want to talk about the seniors, because many of us in this situation with both young children, but also elderly folks, and this group, you know, Minister, why the focus on giving more support for long-term care services, especially home caregiving? In particular, and do you think this is going to be enough to help deal with the rising cost of that?
Well, we have an ageing population. By 2030, one in four Singaporeans is going to be age 65 and above. So you can see that the need for long-term care is going to increase exponentially. Not everyone can be in residential or institutionalized care. There will be a large proportion of those who will be living at home or in the community or with some sort of services. So this year's budget is actually very carefully calibrated. We have increased the subsidies as well as the coverage for residential long-term care. Then it also increased the subsidies and the coverage for home care as well as care in the community, and also the seniors' mobility fund. And we've also increased the caregiving grant. So it tackles different aspects. Some of those may be in, you know, nursing homes or whatever, but others may be aging in place. So the budget is actually intended to tackle each of the different aspects. Mm-hmm. We've also extended the EASE program, which is originally started for the HDB units, to private properties. Because as those in private properties get older, having things like ramps, grab bars, non-slip, you know,
they don't want to feel left out as well. So. I want to thank you so very much for joining us on the show.
And thanks for letting me visit.
Yeah. See you guys.
We're going to take a short break now, and then we will be continuing our conversation with Minister Indrani on the topic of jobs and upgrading.
For people like our age 40 and above, there's always a growing concern about job security.
Skills upgrading once again plays a part in this year's budget, which builds on measures announced in previous years, like the Skills Future Level Up program for workers aged 40 and above. Now, Minister, now from the workers' point of view, right, I mean, this year's measures seemed incremental compared to last year, although I'm sure mid-career workers, they're going for part-time training, they definitely welcome the monthly allowance. But this year's Skills Future announcements seemed more focused on incentivizing companies. What is the rationale for that? Or how would you contextualize these measures?
Okay, so you've got to see how every year's budget builds on the previous years. So last year, Prime Minister Lawrence Wong announced the Skills Future Level Up program. It's a whole package. And it had the allowances for those who go for training. It provided for an additional diploma for those who've either had, you know, one diploma already, or an ITEC or a university degree. So you can actually go for another diploma. Mm-hmm. Then allowances for those who had lost jobs and were wanting to upskill and reskill. So that's the base. But a lot of that's going to be coming into effect in this year. So this year's budget for the individual builds on that. and it extends the training allowance to those who want to do it part-time rather than full-time. Because there are a number of people who are working, they still have their job, but they also want to upskill. So that's one component. But on the other side of it, because some of the training, yes, you can go to the polytechnics and the IHLs, but actually some of the best training takes place on the job with the companies on the work site. So you will see that this year's budget also basically promotes or encourages companies to run the training programs, to become company training centres, to give them incentives to do job redesign and basically to carry out training as an organisation.
So in a way, it's a bit more flexible and more all-encompassing, knowing that because you learn best when you're actually on the job doing it, you know, doing by learning.
Yes, but there's an added advantage because there are some companies, when they train, they're also looking to recruit.
Yeah.
So you don't necessarily train only just for the sake of training.
Okay.
You're training for your own pipeline as well.
Right, with an eye out if the guy
that's
does
right.
well, you keep him on. But actually, that's great. And we understand that you met up with one man who has benefited from this support.
Yes.
In fact, he's got a great story to tell. I was so impressed when I heard it. Muhammad Sharil left school with just his O-levels. He's hustled selling groceries, reskilled for a career in people development. And today at 46, he heads global learning and development for a logistics company. So you had a chance to speak with him and we've got a clip about that. Let's take a look.
It's an amazing story.
I came from a very humble family, so my mindset was just to get to somewhere better.
When you set up your shop, you were roughly how old?
21.
Oh, that's really young.
But business didn't go well. I need to close down all my shop. I started my journey in 2014. The first program is called ACTA, Advanced Certificate in Training and Development, offered by the government. And that actually opened doors for me to take a leadership and people's management diploma under the SSG.
Ah, okay.
All right, and that's funding up to 90% and I just paid 10% for it. Equipped with the diploma, I managed to get an advanced diploma in training and development.
So it's like stepping stones, one after another.
Yeah. And with those three that I had, I was offered a uni program followed by MBA.
Wow. From someone who started with just coming straight out of school and working, then you ended up with an MBA. Yeah, amazing.
So it is really a journey. And even now, I owe so much to SkillsFuture because every year I would go to take up SkillsFuture courses.
That's such an inspirational and great life journey. For other people who are looking to upgrade, what would be your advice to them?
SkillsFuture offer you a wide range of framework or skills, and you may not know exactly what you want to do, but going through those courses will actually kind of open up some ideas of where or which direction to take after that. Because if you don't upskill, you're not staying relevant to what the market needs.
In fact, I think his journey was so inspiring that his wife decided to take on the same path, right? She went from her N-levels to soon completing her master's.
That's right.
Wow. So what's your takeaway from meeting them?
I think, you know, what really stood out, right, was his determination to make something better of himself. His determination to not let his circumstances define him, I thought that was really impressive.
Actually, at this point, I want to bring in another guest who has also benefited greatly from SkillsFuture. We have Mark. Warm welcome, Mark. Last year, with the help of his SkillsFuture credits, he completed a year-long specialist diploma that he now applies to his role overseeing radiation safety and facility management, among other things. So, Mark, perhaps you can share with us your thoughts of the new training allowance under SkillsFuture.
This is a very welcome initiative by the government because what I did was part-time. It covers some of the transport or commute courses, or even though some of the courses might be online, it's also covered a bit of the electrical bill, the Wi-Fi, the bandwidth, or buying necessities like laptops, things like that. So actually, it's quite a welcome initiative. I treat it as an additional bonus for you to complete. You get some motivation to complete it as well.
To what extent do you feel that's key to getting more Singaporeans like yourself to keep upgrading, or other factors?
Actually, one of the factors for part-timers, I might be wrong, because all this specialised diploma is actually quite an intensive course, I think about a year. So there are modules that require assignment and examination, and exam. So I think I took about 10 examination subjects. So perhaps a few days of study would be good. I mean, because the course which we took is not sponsored by companies, so we take it at our own account. So I think government would be good if they can work on this aspect so to encourage more people to go take out the skills, because there's really require a lot of time and effort. Mm-hmm. So you might really need some fees for that as well, to do your assignment, to handle your examination, etc.
Yeah. I can only imagine going back to school as an adult is hard enough, working and studying, and then now you're finding that you have to use your own leave to take exams and things like that. So study leave is saying something that is key for them. What do you think, Minister?
Well, I mean, we're open to all ideas. Mm-hmm. So just as this year's budget is the result of input that Singaporeans gave us from the Forward SG exercise and other exercises, this is one of the ideas that we can take back to MOM and ask them to have a look at it and see whether it's something that's feasible.
Okay, we'll put it on Ask the Manpower Minister, the other show. Okay, let's move on. We've got a question from a viewer who asks, you know, why are folks in their 30s not included in high government subsidies for their upskilling journey? So they're referring to the extra skills future support being given to those in their 40s and above.
Why is it that, you know, those below 40 don't get as much? The reason is this. When you first... It's to be expected that when you first come out of school, your skills should be relevant and up to date, because the schools are supposed to be teaching you the very latest, right? And as you go into your workplace, that's still very much of a learning journey. But as time goes on, what happens is, and I'm sure that all of you have experienced this, you get comfortable in your job, you get used to the skills, you know what it's like. And then after a while, the learning curve slows a bit. And then whilst the learning curve is slowing, technology, innovation and other things are happening all around you. And before you know it, because you've been so focused on your work, you look up one day and you suddenly realise that, hey, a lot of things have changed. And that's usually at around the age 40 period, because you've been working for some time. So that age group is the age group we want to make sure does not lose out. Because if you're 20, your skills should be relevant and up to date.
No doubt that we have this wide range of courses under Skills Future. The question for some people, though, is do these actually match the fast evolving needs of the global job market? And so for instance, say I'm a worker, right? And I'm training for a certain role today. Do I know for sure that there is a continuing career path in this for me, that say in 5 years' time, I'm not going to be asked to reskill again for a very different role in a completely different sector? And Mark, actually, I want to bring you in and ask you if you agree with this concern.
Yes, I do agree. Actually, for people like our age 40 years and above, there's always a growing concern about job security. For the skill future wise, on our part, you can attend the skill future courses and train relevant skills or to stay relevant. But in any cases that there's a career mismatch, then we have to undergo career transition. So I believe those skills that we had will be lost. So another thing is that perhaps there are something can be done to ensure that the job market is robust so that our skill will always stay relevant.
Yeah, so Minister, I mean, there is some genuine fear among, you know, mid-career workers who feel that there is perhaps maybe a jobs mismatch, you know, with the kind of skills future that they enrol in. So, in other words, you know, is there anything that the government can do to sort of align with the needs here?
Well, I definitely empathise with how they feel, because it can be very disconcerting when you see your job or your industry changing, right? And then you feel, do my employers still want me? Am I still relevant? The thing is this, the market determines whether a job stays or not. Because if the market says that, you know, this type of job is useful, then there will be a demand for it. But there could be some types of jobs where the way you do the job just changes completely. When I started out as a lawyer, we all were still writing things with pen and pencil, right? Can you imagine a lawyer today who doesn't know how to use an iPad or doesn't know how to use a digital device? You just have to change the way you work. So what the government is doing is firstly trying to make sure that we have more job opportunities, and you do that by making sure that we have a dynamic economy. But what we cannot guarantee is that the exact job that you're doing now will stay the same for years to come. Because we do know that the nature of jobs will change and the way you do the same job will also change. So that is why we want to inoculate people right. by helping them to have the chance to upskill or reskill or transition to completely new industries if need be.
But at the same time, some of them may say, I don't know where to go. There's so much to choose from. Can the government help point them in the right direction if they know industry trends point towards there being a greater need in this area for this type of role, perhaps? Then encourage more of them to learn in that area.
Yeah, that is a really good point. And I think more career guidance is something that we're looking at as well. And it can take place in various ways and forms. Obviously, for those who are studying or doing things at the IHLs have very strong career guidance, but Workforce Singapore, WSG, also has got career guidance services, and NTUC. Good to speak to NTUC as well. And actually, most people will find the answers that they need when you start to ask. Mm-hmm. Because all the answers may not be in one place or with one person. But once you start asking, it sets you off on a journey because somebody will say, I don't know, but maybe you check with somebody or why don't you try this one? So it's very important to set off on that journey of asking right. and looking and you'll find your answers.
So in a way, we need to start that journey on our own by asking questions and wanting to know.
I think we're more advanced in the traditional sectors, not so much for AI yet, but I think akan datang.
This year's budget looks at steps to take the Singapore economy forward. And one key growth frontier that stands out is artificial intelligence, or AI. To help enterprises adopt AI solutions, the Enterprise Compute Initiative will be set up with up to $150 million.
And joining us for a conversation on this and other measures to grow local innovation, we have Ng Yen Kai. He is just 32. He's co-founder of Superbench, an AI-powered operating system that provides solutions to SMEs. So Yen Kai, welcome. Thanks for joining us. Let me start off by asking you for your thoughts on enterprise compute as a way to build Singapore's AI capabilities. What do you think?
First off, thank you so much for having me. For this enterprise compute, it's a really important initiative for SMEs because for us, a lot of these SMEs, they are looking to optimize their back office costs. And so you can see that with the government coming in with all this support, it's really, really helpful for these companies who are looking to innovate and become more efficient in their processes.
So one of the challenges for Singapore will be both building up the AI talent from the bottom, but also attracting top experts from around the world. What do you think really needs to happen to trigger this start in the AI field, to get our young ones excited about it and learning in that area? Do you have any thoughts on that?
So I think the Singapore government already have quite a few very interesting initiatives. We have AI Singapore, the IMDA Gen AI Sandbox, as well as like Lorong AI. A lot of these initiatives bring local Singaporeans together to discuss and kind of tinker with AI tools. So having all these people coming together is a good start to build the AI community in Singapore, but we also need more guidance in terms of reskilling these students as well as giving them more practical AI skills.
There is this sense that, you know, a lot of our local grads, you know, fresh out of university, they lack these practical skills for AI. So do you think that the government needs to do more to get, you know, to create this AI-ready workforce?
Well, this is part of it because we have the National AI Strategy and there are going to be many, many different facets of it. But this is one of the facets with the this AI initiative to basically attract companies here or those with AI solutions, have them anchored here and basically start to generate buzz. I'm going to sort of take you on a very short memory lane just so that you see how the strategy works. I don't know whether you recall in the mid to late 1990s, that was the whole sort of, it was before the year 2000, right?
Right.
It was just the dot-com era. Mm-hmm. And at that time, the government was saying that we need to have infrastructure, digital infrastructure, and everybody needs to get linked up digitally. And I still remember at that time, this band 90s saying, why must we do this? And then it became very apparent why it was necessary. And that was the email era. Then we went into, I think, was it 2007, 2008, when the iPhone came along. I mean, smartphones today are common, but at that time, it was groundbreaking and new. And it basically had brought convergence, where everything got converged into the same device. And then you were working on the move. So at that time, it was also new, but Singaporeans slowly took that on board. Yeah. Then in the last decade, we were talking a lot about digitalization. And everybody was like, oh, must we? Why? Same question, right? And will we be able to do this? And we did get along that journey. And then the pandemic came along and sort of pushed everybody into this.
Right.
And now we're having a next extension of that conversation, which is AI. So you can see how through the decades, the government has started, catalyzed it. But you need to let, you know, private sector, businesses and people do their thing. And that's exactly what's happening right now.
I definitely remember those days, you know, and it's always, again, about being nimble, it's trying to pivot, you know, seeing what is the... But, I mean, back then, we
didn't
have
a BlackBerry.
I did have a smartphone for a while, and then now that you have one, you can't think about living without one, right? But so these efforts, in a way, are to spur us in a certain direction. I mean, we don't know exactly what's going to happen in the field of technology, but we know that we need to be in that space, right?
Yes.
And we want others in our country to also be working towards that.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, Yan Kai, earlier we were just talking to Mark about skills future, right? And I'm curious to know what you think, because one of the issues that surfaced was the need for stronger connections between training programs and real job opportunities. Yeah. So do you agree that there is a gap? Where would that gap be, and why do you think there's a gap?
Absolutely. I think for skills future, it's an incredibly generous initiative by the government. But at the same time, there's a gap between the number one, if employers actually recognize the certifications gained on SkillsFuture, and number two, the practical experience gained from these courses. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times when you go into the job, you might have the technical knowledge, but employers are still looking for these practical experiences. So my question for you, Minister, is do you think that the government can support any partnerships to help these people who use SkillsFuture to reskill into a new job, gain this practical experience, or maybe mentorship from the community?
I think the answer is yes. In fact, that is one of the strategies that we are exploring. Mentorship is incredibly important because you learn the intangible things, and especially when you're in a nascent area and there isn't any textbook or somebody else to tell you. You need people in that space, right? And the matching part's important. Also, the creating of the time to do that. So you're right. The basic building blocks will be the theory part, but there's nothing like really getting immersed. So mentorship, internships, partnerships, and on-the-job training and training in companies. Those are the various strategies that we're pursuing. I think we're more advanced in the traditional sectors, not so much for AI yet, but I think akan datang.
Okay.
I've committed Minister Tan Sie Ling to this by saying all of this.
So we are coming to the end of our little discussion here. So a lot of ground has been covered tonight. And of course, there will be more conversations about the budget, I'm sure, in the next few weeks as details of the various initiatives emerge. So, Minister, in a nutshell, I guess, what do you hope these conversations between Singaporeans, whether it's over the dinner or whether it's online chatter, what do you hope they would be talking about or they would take into consideration?
Well, I hope that they feel assured, hopeful and inspired. Mm. Assured because there's help for cost pressures and you know, for work, for reskilling. Hopeful because they can see the opportunities that are going to come out of the money that we're going to pump into the economy and create growth opportunities, and inspired because we want to write the next chapter of the Singapore story together.
Yeah, and to feel that we can all do it together.
Yeah, that's
so I think
good.
There'll be a most common coffee shop talk will be, hey, so have you spent your CDC voucher? What do you use it for? What did you buy, you know?
Lots to go around.
That's right.
And make sure no one is left behind.
That's right. All right, Minister, thank you so much for coming and joining us today. This has been Ask the Finance Minister. You know, if you have feedback on this year's budget measures, you can also reach out to reach.gov.sg or at the various Reach social media platforms. On that note, this has been Ask the Finance Minister, and thanks for watching. It's Otelia Edwards and Stephen Chow with you.
See you soon.
Bye for now.